Lisa Saunders, Public Health Manager.
Macy Clark, Student Public Health Officer.
Rory Donald with Manx Care Community Wellbeing Service as the Principal Psychologist.
Shirley Kane, Edspace.
Last but by no means least,
Dan Dooley, Edspace.
And this is the podcast, I think it's podcast number 3 or 4, I've lost track now, on mental health and mental well-being as well. Perhaps I'll start off with sort of you, Lisa, and just taking the, as soon as we say mental health, sometimes some people recoil a bit. Is it still something which people feel it's difficult to talk about, or have we improved?
I think in the general population, we do encourage people to talk about their mental health. We kind of use more terminology as mental well-being, because it's not just about around just how you're, it is about your feelings, but it's that wider, the effects, the impact from other things within your community. So when we talk about like debts, your finances, we could be looking at, you know, outside impacts, so like housing, that can affect your mental well-being, and then cause that later down the line that would cause you issues with your mental health. So I think we do talk about mental well-being, and people talk about their mental health, but actually for me it's important that we talk about mental well-being and how people can support their mental well-being and actually understand what helps their mental well-being and helps them maintain that, so that they don't then need to go down, they can get support earlier, but they could don't go down the point where they get to crisis.
Macy, we say for you, we say the phrase mental well-being. What does that mean for you? How would you describe that?
I would say mental well-being is how that you're feeling socially and emotionally. But I think it has many layers to it, and it doesn't always have a single cause. So, you know, sometimes it is linked to like external pressures such as debt or domestic violence, while other times it can arise without an obvious trigger. So I think that's the important thing to remember about mental health, is that there isn't just one cause to it. There's so many factors that influence it.
And does it change? I mean, does mental health change as we go through life?
Yeah. Yes, it does. So for young people, it's really important that we kind of create that resilience in young people, that they know where they can get support. They know what the triggers are. They feel comfortable talking to people about their mental health. So it's really important that young people are learn and understand in the school settings around actually how they can maintain their well-being and when they need to go and talk to somebody and get support, and not be embarrassed or worried about talking to somebody about their feelings. It's really important that we make that the norm, and that it's okay to be upset or to be worried about something. And then as we go through into adulthood, we have the pressures of like we said, like around finance and debt, and at that stage it's really important that people are aware where they can go and get help and support from, and at what points they need to get support. And as we get older, there's also that pressure around isolation, not accessing your community as much as you did. And it's really important that as a community, that we realise that our older population are sometimes actually isolated, and that actually it's really important that we check in with people and ask, you know, how are you doing? How are you okay? And that actually people may not realise that actually that really helps other people's mental health and well-being, and it helps reduce the isolation and helps them have a connection with their community.
So, Rory, I'm assuming, is this sort of, was Manx Care and mental health services and the work you do, is this going to be a sort of first point of contact for people if they're thinking they might need some assistance?
I think certainly there are services in the community that would be the first point of contact for people seeking help with their mental health. But in terms of what you're asking about, sort of stigma, and in terms of changes in generational attitudes to mental health, I think it's really important to recognise that, you know, that certain people from maybe an older generation, sometimes we find when they do come into contact with services, are struggling to do that because they've grown up in a time where that was seen as weakness or seen as something that, you know, they shouldn't do, that they might be embarrassed to do. And a lot of our work is, once they do reach us, is sort of helping people to get over that and recognise that it is okay to be struggling at times and to need help and to reach out, and that there are services there for people that need that. And other things, you know, that people sometimes are embarrassed to get in touch with services, particularly around men. There are issues that I'm sure we'll get onto later about the barriers to men getting in contact with mental health services due to Again, similar ideas that it's a sign of weakness or a sign as not being good enough, or because they're told, you know, that men shouldn't cry, they shouldn't get upset, so therefore any sort of emotional display could be seen as something that they don't want to give, they don't want to do. And obviously therapy is about helping people to get in touch with those emotions and express them.
And do we become more accepting, do you think, then as we sort of age, as you say, do we sort of see as the years go by that we're more accepting that if you have some difficulty with your mental health, it's just a human frailty the same as anything else, and nothing to be either worried or ashamed of?
I'd like to think so, that society is changing, but I think it's a slow change. I think, you know, someone's more likely to go to a doctor with a physical health problem, you know, with a mental health problem. They probably feel that that's something that they should cope with on their own and might not reach out for. And, you know, that there are, as we'll look at probably later on, a array of services out there to help people with different needs. And it's sort of having that mindset and encouraging people on the island to open up to that and engage with the services that are there, and not feel as though they're going to be sort of pushed away or rejected. That, you know, we have a stepped care model of mental health on the Isle of Man, and there are different services at each step. And, you know, where I work, we're at step two. So we work with people that are coming into services who maybe have had previous contact with mental health services, or maybe it's their first time, but they're not presenting with a severe and enduring mental health problem, but they may be experiencing common mental health problems like anxiety and depression. And we tend to offer sessions over 3 to 4 months. And I must say, we get really good outcomes. And so I enjoy my job because we see people improving and their mental health getting better.
And is it still, in essence, sort of fear of the unknown that people are so worried about it? And that if you have a sort of physical disease or a broken arm or a broken leg, or you've got something which is clearly physical, then we can see that, we understand that. If you see someone who might be suffering with mental health, they look perfectly normal.
Exactly, yeah. Sometimes it's harder to see it in others or to recognise it in yourself, I think, and to be aware that, you know, that there are things that can be done to help, and that people don't have to suffer in silence, as it were, that, you know, that by talking to the people around them, and if someone suggests, you know, maybe you do need a bit of help, then to take that on board and to see that as something that is acceptable, regardless of, you know, what you might have been told in the past, to sort of pull your socks up or whatever, you know, that, you know, it's okay to reach out for help.
So Shirley and Dan from Edspace, talk us in then how the third sector comes into this. I assume, again, it's another sort of hand in glove that the community or the third sector works in partnership with Manx Care and with the professional services.
So there is a few charities out there in the third sector that do help. Edspace, we run Ed's Man Club, and we also run Women's Talk, which is two peer-to-peer support groups for people over the age of 18, where we try and help ourselves by talking, and it's usually lived experience that does help. If someone else has been through something, they can help you getting through that hard stage in your life. There's also Samaritans. Samaritans are very, very good. If you don't feel like you need to talk to someone you know, you can talk to a stranger, and even just talking about your issues or your problems, sometimes that's all you need, is just getting out of your system. But there is plenty of charities out there that can help talk you through things and support you and signpost you if you need further help from the professionals.
So who would you, I'm just again thinking, if someone was listening to this and they're thinking, God, you know, they were feeling that they might have issues, they were looking maybe for help, they hadn't sought help before, and they're always worrying, where would I go first? But what would you say? I mean, would it be someone like Edspace would be a good first point of contact? How would you say someone who's never maybe sought help for their mental well-being before, where would be a good first point of contact?
Well, everyone's welcome to come along to one of the clubs, and then you can see how you feel, see if you want to talk in a circle and open up. It might not suit you, but it is a good place to start if you're not wanting to go to the professionals straight away. It's through your choice, but it won't do you any harm coming down 2 hours of your time and just to see if you do get more support from your peers.
So how long have you been with Edspace then, or involved with that? Dan, is it something you've been with some time? Or
we started the clubs in January of this year, so we haven't been going a full 12 months yet, we've had just coming up to 800 people through the doors in Douglas and Ramsey. The men's group in Douglas is quite popular. There's guys there, you know, all different stages of mental health, all come along, get support, build friendships.
And is it sort of like a sort of workshop type session, or how do the sessions actually sort of work, the actual meetings?
Right, so we sit in a circle and the lads get asked three questions to start with. They're designed to kind of get you to ease into opening up, so they can talk about any of their issues at all that they've got. Then we have a period of peer-to-peer support where I might be going through something that you've already been through and you can help me on that. So sometimes the guys, they're clouded, you know, from the problems. They can't see the right way, or they can't see an answer, but someone in that room could have the answer for them because, you know, they've got lived experience of it. After the peer-to-peer support, we have a cup of tea and biscuits.
Always good tea and biscuits.
The girls have cake, though.
Oh,
yeah. That's a lie.
And
I don't know if we can approve of that.
After that, we have two more questions which are designed to put your head into a much better place, mm-hmm. and make you think back to happy times. And there's questions such as your favourite track of all time and why. And then straight away you start thinking about happier times in your
good
life.
Things.
And yeah, that's where we leave them to the following week then.
And that's often a great help in itself, isn't it? If you're with a group of other people who you can relate with and think, gosh, you know, I'm not the only one who's felt like this. There are other people there sitting next to me who are talking about exactly the same sort of feelings I've got. That in itself can be a great sort of solace.
Yeah, it can. It helps a lot of the guys, because sometimes they come along and think, oh, my problem isn't that bad. You know, after they've heard someone else talking, or they're glad that somebody else... They're not glad that they're going through the same thing, but they're happy that they found somebody else who's going through the same thing as them. And we find a lot of the people who come along to the sessions, they build up support outside of the groups as well themselves. So they'll meet up, have a coffee, check in on each other and outside. So it's building friendships as well.
It's also feeling that you're not alone, because when you're going through the dark times, you can feel like you're the only one in the world and you're the odd one out. But we're all suffering. Or we all do suffer throughout life with different experiences, and with helping each other, it's building a sense of community. Something that we have lost on the island is that feeling of community.
And does that, again, do you think that because of that feeling of community has maybe, as you say, dissipated somewhat? You think that actually it's an issue for, when it comes to the community point of view, for the mental health of the community?
I think so, but I think there's always has been a problem with mental health, the subject, because no one wants to show a weakness, or people, I think the problem with the Isle of Man, but this is my personal thing, is that people are scared that someone will talk about them. Oh, if I open up, they're going to talk about me. Let them talk about you. It doesn't matter. You're the most important person in the world, not the person that talks about you.
Yeah.
I agree, Shelley. I think we forget sometimes that all of us at some point in our lives will struggle with our mental health. And it, actually just realising that actually then we should be more kinder to each other and understand that. And actually, I'd like to think that if anybody in the community contacted any of the charities, there's that no wrong door approach, that if they've gone to the wrong service, that they would be signposted into the right service that's going to support them. So on the public health website, we have support and contact page, and actually anybody could go on that page and look at and see what support would be the right support for them to go to, because we're all different and we all need different things. And actually EdSpace might not sort what to, you know, support one person, but calling the Samaritans might be the right thing for them to do. So there are a variety of services across the island that are available to support people with their mental health, depending on their situation and what's going off at the time, that would support them.
And I think the island is very good for signposting each other and looking after each other. Is all you need to do is reach out to somebody. And the support will be there in whatever way you need.
There's also on Facebook, there's a group called Manx Pact. And that's a good group, actually. They're a peer support group. They're a group of people who care about each other, and they're really good at signposting when somebody's struggling. And people can post on there anonymously, so it's easier for them to verbalise what's going on for them. And more than often, they get lots of responses offering support and where they can go and get support from, mm-hmm. depending on their situation.
And I was going to mention, you just mentioned there, how common it is. And I assume, because again, I know plenty of people in my family and friends, I assume actually having some sort of issues with it, with your own mental well-being, it's far more common than people might suspect.
Yeah, this is very, it's very common. And it is something we don't always talk about. But everybody, you know, we can all have bad days at work, can't we? Mm-hmm. And actually that's really important around workplace well-being and making sure that employers are managing their staff's, you know, mental health and supporting them when they're having challenging times. It's really important, you know, to keep people to remain in work and then keep employed, because that essentially will help their mental health. And if they have a good employer that supports them through that when they're having a tough time, they're more likely to stay in their job, which actually is economically far better for that, the employer and the employee.
Yeah,
especially the amount of time that you spend in work, it should be one of the nicest environments.
Yeah.
And Macy, do you think you've sort of seen that it's becoming more proactive, of people talking more about mental well-being rather than waiting until you feel you have got a problem with your health and then seeking help? Are we sort of being more proactive, do you think, now?
I would say that there is we are being a lot more proactive in terms of mental well-being. Public health has been liaising with a lot of like the third sectors, particularly for, say, like World Suicide Prevention Day. So I feel like the services are becoming a lot more connected than they have been in the past. So I feel like that's one way in which that, you know, we're aware that like rates are increasing in terms of mental health. So that's why, you know, we notice that it's a problem, and we're all working together with the third sectors and other organisations to hopefully minimise risk as much as possible.
Well, of course, as we're recording this and chatting, we're on the run-up to Christmas, which is seen obviously as a big celebratory time of year for an awful lot of people. But again, I'm assuming, and I'll throw this open to anyone who wants to comment on it, it can often be a trigger, I assume, for a lot of people if they are struggling, and that it can be very, very stressful and actually lead to people really struggling at this time of the year.
Definitely, yeah, I think for some people, because it'll bring back memories of people that aren't here anymore, people that they've lost. So that'll be, you know, the bereavement issues, loss issues that will be coming up for them. It's a time where people may think of, you know, happier times in the past, and maybe they don't have that family around that they used to have around them. But, you know, the other side to that is to be aware of those, you know, sort of happy memories that are there, and to treasure them, and to think about, you know, how you want to spend your Christmas, and think about, you know, sometimes it's about putting in boundaries and to able to look after yourself, and to make sure that, you know, you're not trying to overachieve in terms of what you're doing for others, but also giving yourself time and space to take care of yourself, and to try and keep up the sort of usual routines that you would normally have, even though it's a time maybe people won't be working, but it's still important to set themselves up and have a sort of, you know, regular time so things aren't too out of control, I think. And yeah, so I think Christmas can bring up issues for people, but I'd also like people maybe to think about how it is a fun time of year as well.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, in, you know, sort of grown-ups think that they're too old to play, but, you know, Christmas is a time to think about Christmas spirit, enjoying yourself and finding ways to play and have fun. You know, it's not just about children.
I was going to say, one of the things that people could do to be proactive at this time of year when they are feeling overwhelmed and with the stresses, it has been shown actually just getting out in daylight hours and going for a walk can be really proactive in actually just lifting your mood slightly when you are feeling overwhelmed and feeling stressed about, you know, trying to get all the Christmas shopping done, getting all the presents, sorting out what you're doing for Christmas Day. It's a lot of pressure at this time of the year if you've got children and a family, you've got to satisfy everybody. But just taking that 15 minutes on your own or with somebody, having a chat, going for a walk, particularly in daylight hours, because the light at this time of year is shorter, so it's important that you're getting that. It can make a real big boost to your actual mental health and well-being, and kind of just lift your mood so things don't seem so overwhelming.
And do we see sort of an increase at this time of the year, as you say, in the darker months when it, you know, the weather's usually worse, the light, as you look out the window now, is going already. Do we see an increase in people reporting that they're struggling with their mental well-being in winter compared to the brighter summer months?
I think sometimes we do see an increase in referrals sometimes around this time of year, yeah. But they're not necessarily related to, you know, Christmas specifically, but it may be things that are being triggered from memories and things like that, or current events and things. So yeah, there can be.
So what can you're mentioning there, Lisa? I mean, what, when we're talking about being proactive and trying to protect or maintain, look after our mental well-being, you mentioned one thing there. What sort of things can people do? I mean, a walk, I mean, again, certainly works for me if I'm thinking, oh, I'm feeling stressed out. You get out, fresh air, walk, get, you know, down by the sea, out in the woods somewhere, can really help. Are there any other things that people can think about doing in order to try and, I suppose, nourish and maintain, and just as we might go to the gym to keep ourselves fit, to keep ourselves, our mental well-being good?
Yeah, so people can, like, even just a simple thing of just like arranging to meet a friend in a cafe, just having that social connection with other people, or popping round to see an elderly neighbour or somebody they know, just having a little bit of a conversation, connection with somebody, and just talking to people can really uplift and increase the mood. Getting out outside in the fresh air, going for a walk, doing things that you like, being kind to yourself. For some people, because they're so busy, it could be just the fact of making a cup of tea and sitting down and having 5 minutes and just staring into space. That might be all they need, that actually just kind of settles their how they're feeling, that overwhelmness. For some others, it may be that just spending time with other people. That's all I can think of. I don't know if anybody else
would. The opposite, it could be if you don't want to spend time, but a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
You're in control of you.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be overwhelming that you're having to go to different family members or different parties and things. If you don't want to and you don't need to and you know that it's going to cause you stress, don't.
Yeah, it's about not putting yourself in those situations that increases your anxiety or stress levels.
And I think another theme is to sort of think about gratitude as well, and what you're thankful for. You know, sometimes you can begin to focus on what's not here anymore, or loss and things like that, but also to look at what's around you now and to think about, you know, what you are grateful for in your life at this time.
Is this something, again, that the EdSpace can sort of help with, again, just helping people think about proactive things you can do to help yourself if they came along to one of the EdSpace sessions, say?
Well, not very proactive. We're a bunch of lazy buggers, really, aren't we? Do you know what I mean? We just sit and eat cake.
I'm liking it already.
Apparently. It's plain and simple, really. Look after yourself. If something makes you happy, if it's going for a walk, sitting watching your favourite film, eating your favourite chocolates, talking to a neighbour, just do what makes you happy. But just don't lounge about where you're putting yourself in a darker place. So try something different. It might not work, but so try something different again. That's all it is. It's just looking for those chinks of light in your darkest day, your darkest days. Is I'm going to make me happy this Christmas.
And it's making small steps
as
well. Because the other thing is that actually sometimes this time of year there's an expectation that you should be happy. And actually you may not feel that you want to be happy and all jolly. You just want to just be yourself as you are at the moment, and just take little small steps. It doesn't have to be anything big. So if you're struggling to get out of the house, it may be that you just go down to the end of your gate and walk and stay there for 5 minutes and then walk back in. And if you can just do that and then just increase that, that might, you know, it's just a small step each day just to try and help lift your mood, but it's something that you want to do. So I think it's important that people don't stay in that dark place, that they're able to kind of try and lift their mood. And the other element of it is also around alcohol intake and around just reducing your alcohol intake, because that just exacerbates the situation when it comes to mental well-being. It can make things sound far worse than it actually is, because there's no problem that we can't work through. You know, there are lots of people on the island that we, you know, to support people. There are no problems that we can't help and support with.
Every problem has an answer, as Lisa said.
But
you have to reach out as well. And we, but the public, us, everyone we also need to reach in. If you think that you're seeing somebody that doesn't look right or seems a little bit different, ask them.
Just, yeah, how are you feeling? Yeah. Are you feeling okay? Are you all right? Everything's
anything
all right?
Anything I can do.
Shirley and I did that the other week. We seen a situation that we were concerned about. We spoke to each other. Shirley said, let me deal with this. Reached out to the person and offered them support.
And I suppose that's something, again, someone who maybe hasn't accessed help for the services, either via the third sector or clinical help, if they feel they've got that far. But it is that thing of, when does someone know that they might actually need help? Because on the one hand, I know we're always encouraged to, you know, again, on physical health, to check things when it comes to cancer and general well-being, go and see a GP. Equally, we all know the health services are under a lot of stress, and so some people might be thinking, oh, I don't want to be bothering someone with something that's not really that important. How would you say someone's thinking, well, you know, when do I need, when should I think I need to go and ask for help?
I'm thinking about that, but I suppose it's also, if you want the help, you know, there's also thinking, do I want it? Then ask, try and find something. You know, and then it's maybe for others to maybe assess and see what might be the right service to meet your needs. But I think the main message is probably to reach out, rather than thinking, you know, do I meet the clinical criteria for a certain issue? You know, I think it's more about reaching out than. But I suppose signs that things aren't going well would be maybe just not enjoying things as much as you used to, isolation, you know, noticing sort of you're ruminating more, negative thinking increasing. But it's different for everyone.
So. What I say a lot is, if your friend was going through what you were going through, what advice would you give them?
Mm-hmm.
So if it is, you need to go and talk to someone, heed your own words.
So if people do need help, then Rory, is actually what services are available if people have come into the system and are seeking help or getting some clinical help? What can actually be done here on the island?
Within Manx Care Services, I suppose it might be worth highlighting Quell to begin with, the online service that's available to everyone that the Isle of Man government pays for and offers support. Whereas where I work is in the Step 2 service, and in terms of the interventions that we offer, we have something called guided self-help, which involves sort of our low-intensity intervention, which involves working with assistant clinical psychologists for about 3 to 4 months. And they focus on common mental health problems, as I mentioned earlier, such as depression, anxiety, some types of trauma, OCD, obsessive-compulsive disorder, panic issues. And so that would be sort of our first level of care. And then within the same team, we also offer what we call our high-intensity interventions, such as counselling and cognitive behavioural therapy and occupational therapy we also offer. Just to distinguish between counselling and cognitive behavioural therapy, it's probably quite useful mm-hmm. for people to think about that. Counselling is a less directive intervention. They're very similar. You're sitting in a room with someone with our service for 3 to 4 months in two chairs, generally opposite each other. But counselling tends to be more about creating a therapeutic space where the client maybe can take the lead on what happens, where they develop a relationship and they're able to work through and try and discover sort of their inner resources and how they want to be. Whereas cognitive behavioural therapy is the one that has all the research evidence base, basically, in terms of what we call the National Institute of Clinical Excellence guidance. And it tends to be a more of a directive intervention. And it tends to be more about sort of learning specific skills to help you with the issues you're struggling with. And it'll involve looking at your cognitions, your thinking, but also looking at what behavioural changes that you can make in order to improve your mood, such as with low mood or depression. There's a lot of research to support behavioural activation, which is about coming up with a plan of just making sort of small steps each week in terms of things that you want to be doing and looking at the obstacles to doing that and the way that our mental health is improved by actually what we do on a day-to-day basis.
So we hear, we sometimes hear people talking about like social prescribing or social prescriptions. Is this the sort of thing where it's a case of trying to help yourself, talking and having these sort of sessions? Is this what we're talking about when we talk about social prescribing? Or
I think probably the occupational therapy team would be better in place to talk about what that is. But it tends to be more about looking at what's available in the community and linking those services to your needs. So those opportunities that you have in the community, whether it's meeting up for going for walks with a certain group of people, whether it's going to the gym, and it's working out, you know, what is there in the community that this person can be doing that will improve their mental health? And it's moving away, I think they're using that terminology, to move away from a medical model in terms of mental health, and to recognise that, you know, for some people medication is appropriate, but for others maybe that isn't the way forward for them, and to recognise that people sometimes don't necessarily need a pill to improve their mental health. It may be about the connections they're making in community through services like Edspace that we've been talking about.
Yeah,
the social prescribing's very early in its development on the island. So the model is actually you don't necessarily have to go to your GP to get medication to help with your mental health and your mental well-being if you're struggling. So there, it's about what suits that person, what their interest is. So it could be that they join a walking group. It could be that they go, there's a gardening group where they do gardening and do different things. So it's still early days, yeah, and there are, you know, there is work being done to look at how we can prescribe more social prescribing, that it's not necessarily done through the GP surgery. It could be attached to that, but it's done in the wellbeing hubs. I know that in the north of the island, it's something that they're exploring and looking at. But it's certainly beneficial social prescribing, because it's not the medical model. It's about actually having that connection, and actually that helps improve your well-being and helps you connect with other people and make new friends.
And again, I think, Dan, from what you were saying earlier on about the sessions there with Edspace, this is something that sounds, well, it'd be ideal there if someone comes along to one of these sessions. It'd be exactly that sort of thing, would it? I guess making perhaps connections, meeting other people who might be feeling the same, and, you know, sharing interests, possibly, you know, going out with other people for walks and such like.
That's right. And quite a few of the people who come to the sessions, they do that. They meet up with others outside of the sessions, which is massively improving their mental health. They're finding support outside of the groups as well with each other, and people are able to give each other the answers afterwards. And we have guys come in who see some of the guys as like a granddad type of figure, and they'll go and get advice from them, and they know that particular person has got shared experience, so it really does help.
Macy, I was just thinking, I was sort of, again, you hear quite often these days about young people coming up and the sort of the pressures of social media and, you know, having to conform or looking at things and thinking, I've got to be like this, I've got to be as wealthy as that, I've got to be as good looking as that. Is this something that also plays into, in perhaps not helping with particularly maybe younger folks' mental health?
I think social media can play a part in someone's mental well-being, but I think it's important to know how social media can actually help as well. You know, through like the work that Edspace do, they have the ability to like reach out to people through social media, and you can build connections with others through there. And I think from what we've all been speaking about, connections is the key to mental well-being. There's obviously so many other factors that influence it, but that's one of them that can hopefully, one, you know, help somebody in their darkest times.
I think also with the social media, I think it's really important that school educate young people about appropriateness of what they're seeing on social media, and actually when they should stop looking, if it's making them feel have negative feelings, then that's the time that they shouldn't be looking at that social media platform, and actually, you know, creating that resilience in our young people so they do know what's good for their mental health and how what things are going to affect them, and when they are affected, actually what they should do about that and where they could go and get support and help from if it is having a detrimental effect on their well-being.
Particularly again with younger folk, and sadly, you know, you do see here at the station that there doesn't seem to be a year goes by where we don't hear some tragic story of a young person taking their life, and you think it really is tragic in the true sense of the word, when there's normally no reason, you know, for them to have done so, other than the fact that clearly they've been, again, bottling up problems, they've been seeing things out of proportion. And exactly what we've been saying around the table here, if they could talk to people, they could feel the same, have the same sort of issues, then you know, these lives could be saved. And I take this comes into, I know the government has a suicide prevention strategy on this now.
Yeah, so we have the suicide prevention strategy. It's due for a refresh next year. And we will be working with the charities on producing that strategy in collaboration with them. So, but the aim of the strategy is to obviously prevent deaths from happening and make sure that those interventions are happening and to understand the reasons of those deaths that have happened, what's behind that, what are the gaps, what's the learning from that. So we're trying to be quite proactive after we have a death, actually, that we understand those, that we can take the learning back to whatever that gap was and actually improve services for people, improve mental health support for where people need it. It's not an easy thing to do. It's quite a challenge, but it's something that's that public health are quite passionate about and want to continue working on and working with local services such as Manx Care, the police. We work with a number of charities, GPs, and the coroner's office to try and understand why we have the high levels of suicide on the island that we do and try and prevent as much as we can. And I agree that actually some of that work needs to be done in schools to actually enable young people to have somewhere that they feel confident and trust to go and talk to through their problems, and not be afraid to talk through their problems. And like Shelley said, it needs to come from right at the beginning, that actually children feel comfortable talking to their about those feelings and not being afraid that of the consequences of talking about their feelings.
I think getting rid of the stigma surrounding the poor mental health and getting people to talk is people will reach out before they hit crisis point as well, because when you're hitting crisis point, that's the hard part to get back.
Yeah,
you're having to get the help beforehand. Because I know it's not an easy fix either.
I know. We mentioned this at the beginning, but are we heading in the right direction there? Are people more willing to talk about mental health issues than they were, I don't know, 20 years ago or something? And certainly when I was growing up, it just never seemed to, you know, if someone felt that they had a, you know, mental health issues, that it was a case of they're almost sort of shoved to one side. But are we heading in the right direction now, saying, no, look, it's just a health problem, the same as any other, let's talk about it and we'll find we can do something?
I really hope so. Cancer was whispered, wasn't it?
Mm.
So mental health, suicide, they shouldn't be whispered. So we've got to be heading in the right direction. We're going to try our hardest. Well, we're all going to try our hardest to change things.
And it's something, again, presumably like so many of these problems, it's sort of, I never like to use the word that much, but multi-agency, the sort of the various services, the third sector, the clinical side of things, the availability of courses and such like, all of these things working together, presumably, to actually help move in the right direction there.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah, we can't work in isolation. Those services cannot work in isolation of each other. You know, I am very dependent upon the charities to telling me what's going off on the ground. They're the people working with the people, you know, on the front line, working with people. If they don't tell me what's going off, then I can't influence and make changes to improve services, to improve what's happening on the ground. So it's really vital that I get that feedback and hear that. So we really do need to work in collaboration so that we can share information with Manx Care, that we can share information with the police, with the with other charities, so that we can adapt and change to the needs of the population on the island. So, you know, there are all sorts of things that get thrown up to us that we may not be aware of, and we're like, oh, we hadn't realised that wasn't working and that's why people aren't accessing that service.
Mm-hmm.
But until people tell us that, we can't make those changes. So it's really vital that people are open and honest and transparent with us, so that we can help and support that to improve our services on the island and actually encourage people to reach out for support when early, before they get to crisis point. For me, that's really, really important, that we are shouting about what services are available, how they can support you, and actually not to be afraid to make contact with those services and get those support, that support.
Ruri, something you mentioned a bit earlier on, we were talking about generational differences between how your mental health might change as you age. But is there a difference between the sexes, between men and women? Are men more likely or perhaps less likely to admit they've got an issue than women, or how does that work?
Yes, but I think also nowadays we have to think about, you know, from a LGBTQ plus perspective, that, you know, that they're probably trans people that might want to access services, and are they going to feel comfortable doing that? And that's something that we need to work on within Manx Care to make sure that we appear as a friendly service that people can access them as. And also, you know, I'm thinking about the history of, you know, homosexuality on the Isle of Man. Maybe it wasn't the most forward thinking over the years, and that maybe
took us a while.
that you know, that it's good to keep up to date with these things, and to make sure that we are inviting people to access the service, and trying to overcome some of those barriers. And that's something that we are looking at currently in our team, to see how we can do that best, looking within our own service in terms of anachronistic attitudes that we may have in our team, and overcoming it, and making sure that, you know, that we offer a service to people that's going to meet their needs, and that we're not prejudiced in any way in how we work with people. We respect people from whatever gender, whatever type of relationship style they might be into, and just being open with people and helping them to move forward, really.
Okay, let's have some access points then. So perhaps if we just go around, and if I start with you, Lisa, and again, anyone listening to this, what's the best way if they wanted to get in contact with, you know, public health manager, with public health or whatever? What's, is there a good contact point for your own services from your point of view?
So the best way to contact our services through, so you can email, I can't remember the email address, but if you go to our public health, Isle of Man Public Health website pages, there's a contact on there. That's the best way to get in contact with us. That goes through to our it goes to our administration, and they direct that to the most appropriate person. So that's the best way for people to get in contact with public health on the island.
Macy, any separate contacts from your perspective or not?
I'd say what's important to remember is that, like, support is available. There's a variety of different services that exist. You know, if you're struggling, say, with, like, external factors that are influencing, you know, your mental health, like debt or domestic abuse, or like you're a carer, you can approach services like the debt office at the Office of Fair Trade. They have a debt counselling service. And then victim support can also help, as well as Housing Matters and Crossroads are all really good services to reach out to.
Okay, Ruri, any direct contact or any suggestion of contact points from your services point of view?
Yeah, for our service, we have a self-referral process, and it's the community wellbeing service that we have our own online self-referral for people that are over 18. For those under 18, there's Talk with I'll Listen, which again has an online self-referral process.
Lovely. And Shirley and Dan, Edspace, what's the best contact for people there who are thinking they might want to access the services there?
We're on Facebook under Edspace, Edsman Club and Women's Talk, so they can get in touch with us through there. We've also just come onto LinkedIn as well.
And we also have websites which is
edspace.im.
Edspace.im.
Women's Talk.im and Edsman Club.im.
Also, I just want to go back to something you said before about people reaching out for help. Sometimes when people do reach out for help to a friend or a family member, sometimes that family member can be uncomfortable, and that can sometimes put people off. Just want to try and encourage people to, if they feel like they do need to go on a course or anything, there are charities, I'll Stand Up Suicide, they do QPR training, and it's all about asking questions in a comfortable way. And I think people need to be more confident in their approach to mental health. Like, it's okay to talk about it. Sometimes when, in particular, if a man opens up, sometimes it'll be shut down. It's like, oh, I felt like that last week as well. And it kind of just ends there. People need to start listening, like actually listening to the conversation that's going on, and give those people the respect, because sometimes it takes a lot for someone to open up. And if you can just sit there and actually listen to them and be comfortable asking the questions, it can literally save lives. And it really is a, you know, it's quite an easy thing to do once you're confident in doing it.
I think also when someone does open up to you, if you feel that it's too much, say it to them. Say, I'm going through a lot myself, but I'm going to try and get you help, signpost to a charity or to another family member. You don't have to take on but just tell them that you care.
So I think overall we've been talking about being open, being honest, talking. I think a good community spirit, and making sure you speak to other people, don't bottle things up. Just finally, are we sort of basically seeing a sort of sea change when it comes to mental well-being, to be proactive rather than reactive? It seemed to be, when I was growing up, it used to be a case of if someone had an issue, they got help. Is it now a case of, well, let's be open about it with everything, with everyone, be far more proactive, so hopefully there'll be fewer and fewer people who need to actually access services to assist with their mental well-being?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely that being proactive, I think that fits with one of the World Health Organization sort of definitions of mental health is around recognizing that it's not sort of, as you were suggesting earlier, sort of about people who are necessarily suffering sort of negative symptoms of mental health. Mental health is about recognizing that there may be times where it's harder, where it's more difficult, but also how are you building on your mental health? What are you doing to look after yourself? What are the ingredients for good mental health for you? And those things that we've been talking about today.
Well, I think we've talked about many issues here, and the main thing is, again, mental well-being is something which is important for all of us, and it's a case of being prepared to talk about it. We all might suffer, and chances are at some stage in life we might have difficulties with our mental well-being, the same way as you might have toothache or a broken finger or a sore thumb or whatever the case may be. It's something that you just need to talk about, talk to your nearest and dearest, go to someone else, talk to someone like Edspace, and there is assistance available if you need assistance and actually need some sort of intervention, whether that is social, whether that's talking, whether that's community-based, or whether that's medication-based. All avenues are available, and there's an option there, but there are people to talk to. Don't bottle it up is the main thing. And enjoy life as best you can and talk to other people who do. I can only say Lisa Sanders, Public Health Manager, Public Health, and Macy as well, Rory Donald, Shirley Kane, Dan Dooley. Thanks very much indeed for chatting with us today about mental health on the island. May you all stay safe and happy, and enjoy 2026.